Okay, I think I might be connected now. Can anyone in the chat room hear me? Not sure what the issue is. Okay. Can anyone hear me now? This is so frustrating. Anyone? I don't know if it's my headset or. Okay. I think we're working now. I'm gonna keep the stream running so I can tell if it cuts out. And I think it might have. Okay. All right. I think we're in the clear now. Please let me know in the chat as soon as you see it cut out so I can take care of it, because we are on a delay, and so that's why it's taking me a little bit to respond to it. I guess we can cut all of this stuff out of the first tier once it archives. But hello and welcome to the Return of Tyr. I'm your host, Drew, and here on Renegade Broadcasting. Today's date is June the 24th, 2014. I almost forgot what year it was. Oh boy, even though I've said it a few times already due to technical difficulties. But let's move on, all right? I guess everyone can call me Andrew from now on because Andy is not on the network anymore. I think he just needed to step back for a bit and I guess get some things, how would you put it? I guess some things, deal with some things in his personal life, some different issues. I really hate to see him go. He's a great host. He covered some pretty diverse topics, and I just it came out of nowhere. I didn't know about it until just a couple of days ago, and so I guess I'll just say I wish him the best, and I hope he's doing all right. And I mean, I don't know what else to say. It's kind of a bummer, but. Yeah, I guess everybody can call me Andrew now. I don't know. Call me Drew. Call me Andrew. Just don't call me Andy. I've never gone by Andy, and then that might cause even more confusion due to Andy, the former host. And I'm kind of rambling here about this now, but all right. I guess I'll give a few comments here. There's been some updates done to the website, I believe. I believe Kyle made it possible to play archived shows with your cell phone or smartphones. we recently got a new stream due to the old stream wanting to add advertisements and things of that nature on there. So that's kind of we had to get rid of it. It was putting up full page ads and really was just screwing up everything. So the stream we have now appears to be working a lot better. It doesn't cut out like the other one used to every few minutes, and seems to be more compatible with different devices and things like that. And also, Kyle added a headline news section today, which I really like, and I actually found an article on there that I'm going to use in the show tonight that I was not aware of in my searches this week. So I really like it. To everybody out there in the chat, say what you think of it. Do you like it? Do you not like it? Whatever. Any suggestions for any changes to the website are always welcome. And post those in the chat, whatever. Post them in comments. Sure, they'll be taken, what do you call it? Not taken seriously. Of course, they'll be taken seriously, but they'll be taken to heart and don't know, we'll try to do our best to make things as compatible and useful and just easy to navigate as possible. Tonight's show is titled Immigration Insanity, because the current immigration system in America is absolutely insane. And I think we already kind of know this. It should be pretty obvious to anybody at least living in America or knows really anything about America, modern-day America at least. And so I decided, you know, hey, I'm going to do this show on immigration. So I start digging into numbers, digging into facts and figures, digging into articles. And I have to say that it made me quite angry to see the amount of complete lunacy, idiocy, bold-faced lying. It's despicable, the state of our immigration system. And there's a few different directions I want to go with the show tonight in relation to it. Did a little bit of research, got a little bit here on La Raza, but I want to stick strictly to just U.S. immigration as much as possible. That's mainly what I focused on, and just kind of stick to the system itself and kind of the details, a little bit of numbers here. Let me see if I can pull up the article. It's just got some basic numbers to give you an idea of just how nutty the current immigration system is and the fact that they're trying to make it even worse, even more open to the wave of immigrants, whether they be legal and also illegal. So now here's a really interesting article. This is it's from Center for Immigration Studies.org, CIS.org, and I'm going to post the link into the chat. I'm going to try to post these links in the description for all the articles I'm reading from so people can kind of research and, you know, check out some other articles on some of these websites, because there's really a lot of material and a lot of statistical data on this type of subject. But this article is titled, Who Got Jobs During the Obama Presidency? And this is actually 2 years old. This is from November 2012. It says, since President Obama took office, 67% of employment growth has gone to immigrants, legal and illegal. There were 1.94 million more immigrants, legal and illegal, working in the third quarter of 2012 than at the start of 2009 when President Obama took office. This compares to a 938,000 increase for natives over the same time period. So while indigenous Americans, I guess you could say, it's in some regard, I don't know what the correct term is for that, but Americans got 938,000 jobs, whereas immigrants, legal and illegal, got 1.94 million jobs. So, I mean, they're essentially getting a million more jobs than we did during that period. Most of the immigrant growth in employment was the result of new immigration rather than immigrants already in the country taking jobs. Some 1.6 million new immigrant workers arrived from abroad since the start of 2009. We estimate 70 to 90% entered legally. And see, this is the thing about the immigration issues. They talk about how they kind of frame it in the way that illegal immigration is a problem. And this was what they were doing back in the early 2000s, the early 90s, probably way back in the 80s, 70s, who knows, where illegal immigration is bad. Illegal immigration is bad. We need to secure the border, yada, 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 yada. When they kind of just, you know, oh, legal immigration is fine. We can keep raising it. It's fine just as long as it's legal. It's fine. And even, what was it, Rand Paul was saying, he's like, if we don't change the laws, we're going to have 11 million new illegal immigrants. So we need to make them legal and make it legal for them to enter because they're going to enter anyway. And I'm like, this guy is supposed to be a libertarian, right? Don't they have that kind of philosophy where you don't judge things that way? You don't say, well, they're going to break the law anyway, so we might as well make it legal. I mean, this isn't about whether they're going to break the law or whether it's legal, illegal. This is a matter of kind of like a principle here. This is not just, oh, we can do whatever you want, blah, 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 to please people that don't even live here, that aren't from here and are not aware of much of what America is really about. but it's just, I kind of lost my main point there. I mean, to change laws just because people are going to break them solely for that basis alone is absolutely ridiculous. That's like saying, well, black people are going to do the knockout game and black people are going to kill each other, so we might as well not lock them up for it because they're going to do it anyway. I mean, you could apply that to any law that's on the books because as long as they're being broken, right? Any law that's being broken, you could make that same argument. You could say, well, they're going to break the law anyway, so we might as well make it legal. That's not how it works. And dealing with the facts of making them legal or making it legal for those that would be illegal coming in illegally, this is not a positive thing for Americans. And not only, I mean, we can look at this from a white standpoint of this is displacing white workers, and certainly it is in pretty much every field, whether it be tech down to landscaping, construction work, low-skilled labor. I mean, heck, I'm sure there's even white people being displaced from their fast food jobs due to immigrants. So this is bad for everybody. I just want to make kind of clear, and I think that's just kind of how we should frame it, and we shouldn't really give, if we see, you know, if you're speaking in public about it, some, you know, black person's like, well, we're all immigrants, man. You know, we all came here. Be like, it doesn't matter. Do you realize you're going to lose your livelihood? You're going to lose your job? You're going to lose your neighborhood? I mean, that's another thing. There was a lot of neighborhoods that were actually, some of them were halfway decent-looking black neighborhoods back in the 80s and 90s, and now are just, oh my gosh, flooded with very many different South Americans, and you know they're living 8 to sometimes 15 people to, you know, three-bedroom house, and it's not it's not a very clean place. It's not really anywhere where I would want to raise my kids, that's for sure. So to kind of go back here to this this one article I was reading, let's see, it's a lot of numbers. Let's see here. Immigrants made employment gains across the labor market. In occupations where immigrant gains were the largest, there were 2.2 million unemployed natives. So there you have it, displacement of the American worker. And let's see, I've got all this stuff and it's kind of scattered about. I didn't organize it, put it in order very well. So I might be rehashing some stuff here and there. So just bear with me. here's another website. You know, I said, well, what is the cost of illegal immigrants in America? Like, what's a ballpark figure? Because there's no way that they're really, they probably spend more research on cow farts every year in America than they do on researching illegal immigration statistics and trying to actually get accurate statistics on that. So here's a website that put together the cost of illegal immigrants at the state level. Now, for I'm going to read the numbers for my state, which is North Carolina, and according to the 2011 census, we had a population of about 9.7 million people. The illegal immigration population, The illegal alien population, according to a 2010 estimate, was 410,000. Now, that might be accurate. It sounds way off to me. I don't think there's that few in this state. Could be wrong. I think there's more than that, and that was 4 years ago as well, so it's liable to be 500,000 by now. Now, the total cost yearly for illegal immigrants by a 2010 estimate is over $2 billion a year, $2.06 billion a year. And we had, as of 2012, the official unemployment rate was 9.3%. So 9.3% unemployment, yet we've got close to 400 some odd thousand illegals? I wonder. So if we were to get rid of those 410,000 illegals, how many jobs would that open up? How many jobs would that free up? I'm sure, I guess I could do some basic math, but I don't know. You could pretty much fix the unemployment problem by getting rid of them. I mean, you would have low unemployment. You still have some unemployment, but there's always some unemployment. Can't be completely gotten rid of. But here's a breakdown. $1.24 billion a year to educate the children of illegal aliens. Now, keep in mind, this is just one state. One state with less than 10 million people in it. $250 million a year on unreimbursed health care for illegal aliens. $155 million on criminal justice activities, $150 million on welfare, and I keep seeing, like, been saying, oh, these illegal immigrants, they don't use welfare, and the legal immigrants, oh, they don't use welfare that much. Yeah, right, $150 million just for illegal immigrants into one state. Yeah, that's quite a lot, if you ask me. I'm sorry. $268 million a year for additional state and local operating costs. And all that, you add it up together, you end up with a $621 annual cost to each of North Carolina's native-born headed households. So there you have it. You get to pay $621 a year to support illegals taking your job. it's just absolutely ridiculous. And for example, let's see here. Let's go to Texas. Yeah, everybody, let's join Glenn Beck in Texas, the most free state in the world. We got 6.2% unemployment rate. We got jobs everywhere. We got oil coming out of the ground. You know, yeehaw! Let's go to Texas. It's so great there. But you're going to have to pay $1,354 to fund illegal immigrants. And that's all the while they're sending them to Arizona. Huh. You know, 1.8 million illegal immigrants in Texas out of 26 million population. 6.2% unemployment. I think that would be gone if you were to get rid of 1.8 million out of 26 million. I'm not going to try to do the math on it here live on air because that would just be very boring. Okay. Now you can go to this website for yourself and check out your state. Although the numbers are a little bit old, it would give you a little bit of an idea. And maybe when you see, you know, you're talking to some people in public, be like, hey, do you know you spend, $600 a year for illegal immigrants? Yeah, how do you like that? I mean, that's a good way to really kind of break the ice on that thing. Just give them some basic facts. I mean, it pissed me off when I saw it. I was like, you got to be kidding me. Yeah, I can't believe that it's costing us that much, and they pretend like, oh, it's not a problem. It's not a big deal. You know, we just got a few illegal immigrants. Like, eh, we'll take care of it. We'll pass some amnesty. Everything will be A-okay. You know, don't worry about it. Here's another article from Numbers USA, which I'm going to play after this. I'm going to play a presentation that was done by a gentleman from that group, John Beck or something like that. He did a video presentation, which is actually featured on the right side of the Renegade page. At the top, it's titled Immigration, World Poverty, and Gumballs. And I will let you know when I go to play it, and if you want, you can open up the video and watch it so you get an idea of like what he's doing, because it is somewhat, or it's very illustrative, but you can get the idea just from listening to the audio through the stream if you'd like. It's still pertinent, but it's good to see the presentation as well. The article here is titled Poll, and this is a Rasmussen poll. It's titled, Majority of Americans Do Not Favor Higher Legal Immigration. Okay. This poll found that, says a new Rasmussen poll finds only 31% favor increasing immigration, and that may be because only 18% of Americans think legal immigration is running higher than $500,000 per year. Okay, 18% of those that took this poll believed that immigration was over $500,000 a year. Well, what is the legal immigration number currently in America? It's set somewhere around roughly 1 million a year, and that's legal, you know, completely legal immigration. but only 18% thought it was over 500,000, even though the official number is 1 million. Here they break it down here too. 11% think about 100,000 enter legally each year. 16% guess 250,000. 14% guess 500,000, and 12% guess 1 million. It's astounding that only that many, only 12% guess the actual number, and 41% typical America said they didn't know. They didn't have a clue. I don't know. A typical American response due to political correctness and cultural Marxist crap. The I don't know answer, because I don't want to look stupid or be called a racist for overestimating the amount of illegal immigrants or legal immigrants into America. I don't know. but it says here that 58% do not want to increase legal immigration numbers. 60%. I think that's a pretty good majority, considering 41% don't even have a clue what the immigration number is. If only they actually had some facts, maybe they would be making a better educated decision and would be saying, you know, if that number would be higher, those actually against it. It's just, let's see here, having a little bit of trouble. Okay, there we go. But yeah, that it's not popular in America to be for more legal immigration even. Imagine that. Aren't all the politicians going out there saying, you know, American people have decided we must reform the American immigration system. We need a pathway to citizenship. We need a pathway to citizenship. These people, we need to help these poor people. They want to get in, and our system just isn't set up to let them come in. They need jobs. They want to work. They want to scrub our toilets. They really do. All these illegals coming in, they just want to come here, and they want to mow your lawn, and they want to scrub your toilets, and they want to clip your hedges, and they want to build your houses and paint your houses, and they want to do all the stuff that American people don't want to do. You know, I don't know how we even got this far. We're so stupid and lazy that we don't want to do simple tasks like mowing lawns. You know, I never see a white person mowing their own lawn. They're so damn lazy. I've never seen a white person working on their own car outside. I never see a white person scrub a toilet. I never see a white person do any of those dirty jobs. They just won't do them. They won't do them. But those great, every illegal that comes here actually wants to work and do those jobs, and they love it, and they're happy. There's not one that's here to commit crimes or sell drugs or cause any trouble. They just want to fit in. They want to integrate. They want to be just like everybody that's already here. They want to be good, respectable Americans. Every single one of them. And it'd be racist if you said that any of them were not good. It's okay to say they're all good, but as soon as you start saying that some of them are bad, you are a racist. That is the way that they frame that every stinking time, and it drives me absolutely nuts. Everybody gets to pat themselves on the back when they argue with somebody that's saying that some of them are not very good people that are coming here illegally and even legally. And they go, oh, well, I know these people. I've met these people. They're hardworking, and they love their families. And I'm like, do you honestly think every single one of them is that way? Are you insane? You wouldn't say that about white people. You wouldn't say that about white people in America. You wouldn't say every single one of them loves their family. They just want to work and make a living. Oh, what a joke. It's retarded. It's just so nonsensical. I mean, come on, let's get real here. Let's forget about offending people. If we're telling the truth and not trying to be just a complete asshole about it, then what's the problem here? People are going to get offended. People are always offended. I get offended all the time. Reading through these articles offends me, particularly what the politicians have to say about all this stuff. And I watched a video of John McCain being asked about immigration and why these people aren't being sent back. And his response was, well, you know, we can't do that. We are a Judeo-Christian nation, and that would go against the moral principles of our founding to do that. So essentially saying, since we're a Judeo-Christian nation and we were founded as such, it would be our moral obligation to break our own laws because people have feelings, and this would hurt their feelings. You know, they came here, they jumped the fence, they swam across a couple rivers, and they walked through some deserts and whatever, brush, and, you know, it just would be wrong to send them back. But I'd love to see what would happen if one of us decided to just hike across the border, you know, all willy-nilly into Mexico or Canada, for that matter, and just say, well, we're here for jobs. We need jobs. We have no jobs in our country. Yeah, I don't think it would go over the same way, do you? Nope. But anyway, John McCain saying we are a Judeo-Christian nation. We are founded as a Judeo-Christian nation. I got news for you. That is the biggest lie, the biggest sack of horse shit I have heard over and over and over again from these Christian right-wing evangelical fundamentalist nut jobs. They parrot this all the time, and they never actually back it up with anything. If anybody has anything to back up us being even based on Christian, strictly Christian values, and uniquely Christian values, then send it to me. The Judeo-Christian thing, I mean, it's even more ridiculous because then you're trying to, I mean, shit, look, we had in North Carolina early on, we barred Jews, Catholics, and a couple other different groups of people from even serving in the government at all in any capacity. I don't think we're a Judeo-Christian nation, guys. That doesn't add up. But I found a letter from Thomas Jefferson to Major John Cartwright, and this letter was sent in June 5th, 1824. He says, "I was glad to find in your book a formal contradiction at length of the judiciary usurpation of legislative powers, for such the judges have usurped in their repeated decisions, that Christianity is a part of the common law." So he's essentially saying that the judges, through their legislative powers, or through usurping their legislative powers, have usurped in their repeated decisions that Christianity, or that common law, comes from Christianity, and vice versa. He says the proof of the contrary, which you have adduced, is incontrovertible, to wit, that the common law existed while the Anglo-Saxons were yet pagans, at a time when they had never yet heard the name of Christ pronounced, or knew that such a character had ever existed. But it may amuse you to show when and by what means they stole this law in upon us. So even Thomas Jefferson, which somewhat considered himself a Christian of sorts, even though the term Christian wasn't exactly around when they first got here and all that, it was kind of a new term. But that's a side issue, and this is all side issue, but I thought it was an excellent quote, and I've never seen it. I've seen plenty of Christians in the truth movement and the libertarian movement quote Thomas Jefferson, even though I think if he was around today, he would think they were a bunch of idiots and probably would hate them for the most part. I couldn't imagine that Alex Jones debates Thomas Jefferson. That would be interesting. Yeah, so there you have Thomas Jefferson saying that common law is essentially based off of pagans. Pagans were practicing common law way before the Christians, till the Christians essentially took them over and converted them to different beliefs and legal systems that they had created themselves, which were so great. They enlightened them, you know, through diversity. They made the pagans into better. Diversity was the pagan and Christian strength of the day. Never mind that all the bloodshed and slaughter of different pagans throughout history. They were just being diversified. So, I don't know. Okay. Let's get off of that. We're outside of the immigration issue, but I thought it was something to bring up. Mr. John McCain offer pathway to citizenship all back in his one of the debates or one of the town hall meetings he did for his campaign, the presidential campaign. He was talking about how global warming is a problem and it's due to carbon, and I'm for cap and trade and all this other nonsense. Cap and trade, that's going to save the planet. That's going to stop us from warming. I like the show. I want to say thanks to Ben for filling in for my show last week. And he did a great job. I really enjoyed it. And I really enjoyed the show that he did with James. And he brought up George Carlin, and I think he played a clip from him where George Carlin just names out all this stuff that the world has gone through and it's still here, and the fact that these people, so-called environmentalists, think that we're destroying the world just shows how narcissistic and egotistical that these people really are, that they think they could actually kill the world with something as simple as carbon, which, I mean, heck, volcanoes emit carbon. Everything seems to emit carbon. I guess it's plausible that it could, but there's no evidence to even suggest that's the case, other than fake evidence, which has been proven to be fake. It's just another side issue. Let's see here. DHS looks to buy men's underwear. Some of it is very big. They They have how many is it they're trying to buy here? 41,000 pairs of underwear, something like that. And 200 pairs of 6X underwear, 300 pairs of 5X underwear, 400 pairs of 4X underwear, 400 pairs of 3X underwear. It just goes on and on. So, yeah, big underwear. The Department of Homeland Security, yep, we got to buy those illegals some underwear because they smell, and they need some new undies. They need some new dungarees. Oh, Jesus. Yeah, immigrants hopping on the death train to U.S. I kind of like the sound of that. Unfortunately, it's not as deadly as you'd think. I don't think it's even really that deadly. And people are essentially what's going on with this death train is kids are hopping aboard some trains and sounds like coming over the border, and they're having to jump onto it when it's going down the tracks and they're falling and breaking their arms and getting boo-boos, and it's terrible. It's just sad. I hate to see little illegal aliens getting boo-boos. Maybe the Pope will go down there and kiss it for them. See, I had something in here about the Pope. Pope Francis. Jesus was a refugee. Pope Francis made a poignant appeal on behalf of the world's refugees during his Wednesday, half of this article's cut off. I printed out some articles. For some reason, half of this one's gone. Let me pull it up on the computer. Oh, that's funny. But here we go. Yeah. Okay, during his Wednesday general audience, reminding all listening that Jesus, too, encountered times of hardship and danger. No shit, they nailed him to a cross, you... What do you think, your audience is completely retarded? We believe that Jesus was a refugee. We believe he was a refugee. They have a lot of beliefs, don't they? We believe that Jesus was a refugee and had to flee to save his life. With Saint Joseph and Mary, he had to leave for Egypt, Pope Francis said, according to Zenit, I guess some other news outlet. He was a refugee. Let us pray, Our Lady, who knows the pain of refugees. The Pope made his petition to the Church, which he defined as all of us, not limited to priests, bishops, or just the Vatican, reported Asia News of all outlets. World Refugee Day is on June 20th. The number of these brother refugees is growing, and in these past few days, thousands more have been forced to leave their homes in order to save their life. Millions of families, millions of them, refugees from many countries and different faiths, experience in their stories tragedies and wounds that will likely not be healed, said Pope Francis. Be their neighbors, share their fears and uncertainty about the future, and take concrete steps to reduce their suffering. There you have it. I love that Pope, man. I love this Pope. He just cares about the people so much. I mean, let's see. What does he do? He carries his own luggage. He rode in a unsecured car, so he dropped the Pope Mobile. He rides around in a Ford Focus. He drives a motorcycle. He kissed a leper or something. He let an autistic kid sit in the Pope Mobile. He let some kid touch him at one point and made a big deal out of it. I mean, what hasn't this new Pope done? I mean, he is an awesome guy. He's just a real guy that really cares. This has nothing to do with the media. I mean, come on. The media is not trying to make him look good. They hate Christians. I mean, Huffington Post, which I just read that article from, they hate Christians. They really do. Why? You know, they're not trying to put this out for any ulterior motive or anything. They're just being fair. And never mind that they put out stuff about Pope Francis, positive stories about him all the time. But yeah, Jesus was a refugee. It's so sad. I wonder where... what's funny about this new pope, he seems to, like, think that God doesn't do jack shit. He just says, oh, I feel so sorry for you. I was so sorry. I hope that things get better for these poor refugees, and we all must stand together and feel bad for them and carry in their sorrow, because that's going to change something, right? Yeah, right. Got more on the pope. This is from... The Daily Beast. Cardinal O'Malley, Pope Francis knows immigrants are the future of the church. Say that again. Pope Francis knows that immigrants are the future of the church. It says here, in the midst, I'm going to kind of scroll down to the middle of it. In the midst of this massive tragedy, the most human and humane voices are coming from the Catholic Church, from Pope Francis himself, and from Cardinal Sean O'Malley. Of Boston. Yeah, two Jews, I'm sure. It's just the Jews. They got to be Jews. No way they're white. White people would not do this, right? Sean O'Malley of Boston, who has spent his life working with immigrants, both those with papers and those without. So his buddy Sean O'Malley, he loves the poor, and he loves helping them out, and it's all good. It says here... O'Malley was chosen as one of the Pope's most high-profile advisors on everything from organizational reform to the scandal of children sexually abused by priests. So I wonder. Makes me wonder about this O'Malley feller. Usually the people heading up the investigations are the ones that did the crime in the first place, so don't know if it's safe to assume that, but he's a piece of shit either way. It says here, in this globalized world, we have fallen into globalized indifference, said the Pope as he stood in a playing field that served as a makeshift detention center. We have become used to the suffering of others. It doesn't affect me. It doesn't concern me. It's none of my business. The globalization of indifference has taken from us the ability to weep. In April of this year, O'Malley went to Nogales, Arizona, on the border with Mexico, and with other bishops distributed communion through the stacks and the tall fence that separates the countries. He took a lot of flack for it. Right-wing Catholic pundit George Weigel, which he sounds like a Jew, George Weigel, criticized him for holding a politicized mass. So you got somebody that might be a Jew criticizing him. It's funny. But other Catholic commentators leaped to O'Malley's defense. This place that is the border, is precisely where our bishops should be because it's where Jesus would be, wrote Michael Sean Winters in the National Catholic Reporter. So you notice here, like, what they're doing and a lot of this stuff is saying, this is what Jesus would do. This is what Jesus would do. When there's nothing to indicate that Jesus would ever freaking bother, but I mean, it's just ridiculous. They're trying to capitalize on an already positive figure that's been dead for centuries and, well, dead for millennia, and at least in their minds, I just lost my train of thought, sorry, but you get the idea. It says down here to bigotry, as religious scholar Reza Aslan points out, is not the result of ignorance so much as it is of fear. Yet most of the fears directed at immigrants are unfounded. There is ample proof, for instance, that first-generation immigrants do not increase crime. They help to reduce it. You hear that? First-generation immigrants don't increase crime. They help to reduce it. What ample proof? Nobody freaking knows, because they never tell you what that ample proof is. Now, I think it's possible that first-generation immigrants are probably not entirely violent, not entirely criminal in their actions and what have you, but I could tell you, judging from looking at mugshots and things like that, it sure looks like the second generation is committing quite a lot of crimes here in America. Says here, obviously, said O'Malley, the fear is not rational, and I think we are dealing with this in an irrational way, or we are dealing with this in an irrational way. In his opinion, the path to citizenship for immigrants, which is anathema to many conservatives, is absolutely essential. If anything, the United States should capitalize on people's desire to become part of this country. He said, they become great contributors. But if their children grow up seeing their parents treated as, well, as aliens, they will be full of resentment. Talking about a bunch of people that for the most part see this as being their land. Isn't that resentment on their part? Sorry. Come on here. That's why I say stay in your own land. We will stay in ours. If we need to redefine the borders for different reasons to accommodate and to make things better for both parties or to make things right in some way, what have you, I say we should at least be having a dialogue about it instead of having a dialogue about how great illegal immigrants are based on how great immigrants are based on absolutely no evidence whatsoever, just people saying that they are good and that they love us and they want to be here and they love America and they want to work and they want to scrub your toilet and they want to cut your lawn. And it's great. It's great that these brown people want to come to our country and scrub our toilets. That's not racist. No. It's very unracist to love brown people coming into your country and scrubbing your toilets and mowing your lawn and cooking you McDonald's cheeseburgers. And that's not racist at all. No, that's what any respectable person would be for. Says here, here we go. Here's the real great line from this piece. The reason we have 11 million undocumented workers here is because we need them. Because we need them. Yes, we just need these 11 million illegal immigrants, which is a load of crap. There's more than 11 million. They've been saying 11 million for how many years? It's not changed. It's kind of like the 6 million number. It always stays at 6 million, no matter how many times the number's revised. It just, they keep saying 6 million. Says here, I don't think it will make any difference to the politicians, said O'Malley, but to the 11 million undocumented immigrants, we need to let them know we care and we are doing something to get this fixed. Why the fuck is it our problem to fix our immigration system because Mexicans and South Americans don't want to live in their shithole countries with their shithole government that is not doing a damn thing for their people? Why is it our responsibility that Mexico's government is not doing anything to help their people and is actively trying to stop militias from going after the cartels because the police force is completely bought off by the freaking cartels because the government doesn't pay them enough money? And the cartels come along and they say, here's 20 grand in a briefcase. You work for us now. And they say, okay, we'll work for you. This is why I get angry, because it's so blatant in your face. It makes no sense whatsoever. It makes no logical sense. It's just in America and in any white countries, we're expected to fix any injustice that's been perpetrated by anybody on the face of the planet, no matter who they are, what group they belong to, what race they are, what religion they are. It's up to white countries to fix everybody's problems. Okay. Time for a break. Time for a break. I'm going to play that clip that I was telling you about, that video clip. So if you would like to click on the link on the right side of the page that says immigration, poverty, and gumballs, I believe, click on it and try to kind of sync it up, and you can just mute or pause the stream and come back, you know, watch it, come back. So I'm going to play it. Hope everybody's ready in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1.
Some people say that mass immigration into the United States can help reduce world poverty. Is that true? Well, no, it's not. And let me show you why. This gumball represents the 1 million legal immigrants that the United States has taken every year on average since 1990. Now, who in the world deserves our humanitarian compassion? The World Bank has one measure of the desperately poor of the world. They make less than $2 a day. And how many people make less than $2 a day in the world? We'll start with Africa. In Africa alone, there are 650 million people who make less than $2 a day. 650 million. And in India, another 890 million people, desperately poor. China adds another 480 million people, making less than $2 a day. And unfortunately, the rest of Asia has a heartbreaking 810 million people who the World Bank says make less than $2 a day. And finally, there's 105 million of Latin America's population that are desperately poor. All told, the World Bank says there are 3 billion people in the world, 3 billion people who are desperately poor, making less than $2 a day. That's 3,000 gumballs. And every year, we take a million and suggest that we've somehow made a humanitarian difference. Of course, we don't pull our immigrants from these desperately poor populations, do we? These people are too poor, too sick, too disconnected to make it here as immigrants. We tend to pull our immigrants out of the better-off poor of the world. And Mexico tends to define the type of immigrant that we bring here because the plurality of people come from Mexico. And Mexico is poor. How many people in the world live in countries that have average incomes lower than that of Mexico? And the World Bank tells us that that number is these 3 billion plus another 2.6 billion people. 5.6 billion people in the world who live in countries with average incomes below that of Mexico. That's 5,600 gumballs. And so what is it that the elites are telling us? They're telling us that when we take this 1 million immigrants, that we somehow or another are tackling world poverty. And we have to do it regardless of the effect on our unemployed, the working poor, the most vulnerable members of our society, regardless of the effect on our natural resources. Even if we went by the most radical proposals in Washington, which are to actually double our immigration to 2 million a year, which would totally overwhelm our physical, natural, and social infrastructures, we couldn't make a noticeable difference. And we may be really hurting the impoverished people of the world, because the million that we do take are among the most energetic, often the better educated, certainly the most dissatisfied people that if they did not immigrate would be the agents for change to improve the lot of all the people in these countries. The true heroes in the global humanitarian field are the people in these countries who have the wherewithal to immigrate to another country, but instead stay in their countries to apply their skills to help their fellow countrymen. Unfortunately, our immigration system tends to entice these very type of people to abandon their countrymen. The impossibility of making even a dent is actually worse than it looks here. Because last year, when we took 1 million immigrants, these countries added, births over deaths, 80 million more people into the impoverished population. And this year, Congress is bringing in 1 million legal immigrants. And this year, according to the United Nations, these countries are expected to add another 80 million people. And next year, you can be quite sure that Congress, unless stopped by the American voters, will bring in another 1 million immigrants. And these countries, unfortunately, will be adding another 80 million people into these impoverished nations. We could take 5 million a year, but we'd never get ahead of what's happening in these countries. Not in this century. Don't you see? Immigration can never be an effective or significant way to deal with the suffering people of the world. They have to be helped where they live. 99.9% of them will never be able to immigrate to a rich country. There's no hope for that. They have to bloom where they're planted. The only place that 99.9% of these people can be helped is where they live. Let's help them there.
And welcome back. You're listening to The Return of Tyr with Andrew. And hope you enjoyed that clip. I hope you watched the video because it really puts it into perspective just how massive this is. I believe he says, you know, we add 1 million legal immigrants a year, and the third world populations making under $2 a day are adding 80 million new children, new births to their nation. So by taking 1 million, even if we were taking it from those nations, not making a dent even at all. And not only are we not actually, you know, we're not getting 1 million immigrants from nations with people that are making $2 an hour, or let me rephrase that. We are not taking in immigrants, by and large, that make $2 an hour where they currently are, or $2 a day, excuse me. We are, in a lot of cases, trying to get, like he said, the best and the brightest, get them into our colleges. Indians, for example, a lot of them are going into, Indians are going into college in the medical field and are becoming doctors, and they do that. In a lot of cases, they're actually going to college in India to be doctors and then immigrating over here due to education costs being cheaper there, and then they come here. And sounds like maybe some people are having trouble. Is the stream coming through all right, or, oh, maybe they watched that video that somebody posted. Sorry about that. But yeah, okay, back to the original premise there. I got a little bit distracted by the chat. I guess I shouldn't pay attention to it, but since I've been having technical difficulties, I'm trying to make sure everything's coming through all right. So yeah, you have, you know, Indians coming here to be doctors, and they're getting paid a whole lot less than an American doctor would. And by, like he says in the video, by taking the best and the brightest from other countries, we are essentially keeping other countries from progressing. And we're displacing those in our countries that are just as qualified, if not more qualified, to do the same job, and they're being displaced from their jobs. So it's kind of a lose-lose-lose-lose-lose times a million times infinity situation over, the years. It just keeps piling on, and nobody's doing anything about it. They keep sending rice to Africa. They keep sending aid to Africa. And India and all countries all over the planet. And what are they doing? They're just supporting their population growth, which has nowhere to go, nothing to do, has very little skills, has very little currently farmed land. I mean, this is ridiculous. You're just – it doesn't make any sense. Let's see here. What did I want to? Okay, La Raza demands amnesty vote for new majority leader Kevin McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy was elected the new majority leader. La Raza and other Hispanic and Asian ethnic groups demanded a vote on amnesty. The new majority leader can either schedule a House floor vote on workable immigration reform, or he can kill the best chance in decades to fix the immigration system and miss a big opportunity to work with Latino, AAPI, and immigrant communities, they said in a Wednesday statement. Our communities and our country need a response now. Which country is that? Which communities are those? Not my community, apparently. They don't really care about our communities anymore, it seems like. They just care about the non-white communities. So, yeah, of course, La Raza wants immigration reform. Big surprise there. Okay, here's another one. This is from whitegenocideproject.com. It's also posted above the chat room, below the stream, the headline news section. It's titled, Rupert Murdoch Calls for Immigration Reform. And then in parentheses it says, Open Borders. Media tycoon Rupert Murdoch, who owns companies such as Fox News and New York Post, along with many left-wing newspapers across Europe and Australia. He also owns media in China and some different Asian companies, I believe Star Television, or he used to. It might not anymore. It might have changed over to his son or something, but I know he was big into the Asian market as well. But he has called for immigration reform. He is also a U.S. citizen. Yes, that was after he immigrated here from Australia. And Rupert Murdoch is actually married to a Chinese woman that has somewhat of a communist background. So I think that tells you what you need to know about Rupert Murdoch. He's not some conservative Republican. Just because he owns Fox News doesn't mean he's a Republican or anything like that. Which even then, who cares? Because what does that even mean anyway? Is this a quote from him? Okay, is the idea of immigration reform complicated by the fact that some immigrants went outside the legal system to be here? Yes, it is complicated even more by the fear some Americans have, quite naturally, of how changing populations might also change our culture, communities, and economic circumstances. Well, of course, immigration means change. I wonder who was using that in their campaign. Change, Immigrants enrich our culture and add to our economic prosperity. Diversity is our strength. Diversity is our strength. They are enriching us culturally and adding to our economic prosperity. Yes, yes, immigration is good for our economy. And the person that wrote this article, Steve Good over there at White Genocide Project, he says here, this guy must be just copy and pasting everything anti-whites have ever said. I think he has a typo there. Yeah, he says, this guy be just be copy and pasting. so yeah, that's why I was getting thrown off. Rupert Murdoch goes on to say, we need to give those individuals who are already here, after they have passed checks to ensure they are not dangerous criminals, a path to citizenship so they can pay their full taxes. Yeah, oh, now we're getting to it. They can pay their full taxes so they can be counted and spied on like everybody else and monitored and become more productive members of our community. Wait, I thought they were already more productive than we are. I mean, they're scrubbing our toilets, they're cutting our lawns, they're raising families. Every single one of them loves their family. They love their kids. They take care of their kids better than Americans do. I thought they were already more productive than our community. I guess he wants them to be more productive. I don't know. He goes on to say, next, we need to do away with the cap on H-1B visas, which H-1B visas are essentially migrant workers, typically within tech-filled positions, high-skill labor. He says, we are held back by the objections of the richly funded labor unions. Hey, look at this guy. Yeah, talking about richly funded labor unions, when look at the type of money this guy rakes in. What a hypocrite. That richly funded labor unions mistakenly believe that if we keep innovation out of America, somehow nothing will change. Yeah, so he's saying that the unions think if we just keep that innovation out, no, we don't want innovation, go away, get it out of America, we don't want it. We don't want that. It might change things. Oh, it's so bad. He says they are wrong and, frankly, as much to blame for our stalemate on this issue as nativists who scream about amnesty. If we are serious about advancing our economic future and about creating job growth here in America, then we must realize that it is suicidal to suggest closing our doors to the world's entrepreneurs, or worse, to continue with large-scale deportations. Question. How many Mexican restaurants do you see with white employees? How many black barbershops or oh man, how many black run barbershops do you see with white employees or Mexican employees for that matter? How many non-white businesses do you see hiring whites or those or members really of other races? I would say few being very generous with that. I'm not seeing Mexican contractors hiring white people to do work. I'm not seeing Mexican landscapers hiring white people to do landscaping work. It's just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, these people just talk right out their ass, like bringing in entrepreneurs. They're going to create jobs in America. Yeah, you know, they're going to create so many jobs for me and you. We should just embrace it. Goes on to say, some politicians and pundits will argue that this is not the time to bring immigration reform to the congressional floor. That is, that it will frighten an already anxious workforce and encourage more extreme candidates, especially on the right. Heck yeah, Will, and it already is, and it's already on the way. And that's why I say to these people, keep it up. Keep it up. I almost support amnesty at this point because they're already here. They're already doing what the heck they want and don't really have to worry about much of anything. Might as well make them illegal and make it official. And maybe Americans will start to realize this is a problem. This is a problem. These people don't need to be here. And they have no right to be here. They have plenty of reasons to want to be here, but they have no right to be here just because they want to be successful in America and live in a free country doesn't mean that they have a right to be here, a right to citizenship, just because they jumped a fence and swam through a couple rivers and all that. It goes on to say, they might be right about the short-term politics, but they are dead wrong about the long-term interests of our country. Wait, I'm sorry, Rupert, aren't you a citizen of Australia as well? Oh, he's probably pushing for immigration there too. That's why I was pleased to see Senator Rand Paul and Grover Norquist, the president of Americans for Tax Reform, set up their efforts to lobby for immigration reform. The facts are on the side of reform. I agree, but we're talking about the wrong reform here. They are talking about the wrong reform. The right reform is to shut down all immigration and to secure the southern border from these hordes coming over and to severely, if not completely, cut all H-1B visas and any work visas coming into the country. If farmers need people to pick and they can't get immigrants over to pick them, they'll have to change something. Things will change. Things will have to change because it's unsustainable. I can say the same shit that they say. I can say, oh, we must change. We must close the border because this is unsustainable. This isn't good for our country in the long run. Farmers are just going to have to change. They're going to have to get used to that. And honestly, that's the truth. But it's multi-layered. It's a multi-layered issue. I don't, you know, don't hate the farmers for doing it. They're just trying to make a living, and they're not really. There's not really any other easy options at this point when they have to buy all the seed and stuff from Monsanto, which is exorbitantly priced, and all these chemicals from Monsanto and other, you know, companies, which is exorbitantly priced, and all the farm equipment from John Deere and International and all these other companies, which is also exorbitantly priced because they can charge whatever they want to farmers because they have no options. They have no other options. It's all rigged. It's rigged against the farmer. But, the facts are on the side of reform, he claims, and democratic societies don't advance when our elected officials act like seat warmers. He's right. They don't advance either when our elected officials pass policies and pass laws that destroy the current population of the country. Economically, physically, and mentally, even. Companies like General Electric, Walt Disney, Marriott, Hilton, Hyatt Hotels, McDonald's, Wendy's, Coca-Cola, The Cheesecake Factory, Johnson & Johnson, Verizon Wireless, Hewlett-Packard, General Mills, and many, many others have all joined together in an attempt to get politicians to open the U.S. border, effectively destroying the whole point of a border. The whole point of a border is to say where one group of people ends and another group begins. All and only white countries are expected to have open borders and forced diversity. Most people can see that these policies are turning white people into a minority in countries across the planet, and yet we are not allowed to do anything about it. If we even talk about it in some white countries, we can be arrested for hate speech. Forcing us white people to become a minority is nothing short of a systematic campaign of genocide against white people. Genocide, according to the United Nations Genocide Conventions, is the targeting of a group for destruction or harm, so by turning a group into a minority through massive foreign immigration and forced diversity is certainly genocide. Diversity is simply a code word for white genocide, because when they talk about diversity, that what they mean is chasing down the last white neighborhood and forcing it to accept a diversity. I like that. I'm going to use that line. Because when they talk about diversity, what they mean is chasing down the last white neighborhood and forcing it to accept diversity. So there you have it. excuse me, I'm kind of congested today. I've got another article, and I want, well, first, let me play Rand Paul, a clip from Rand Paul talking about immigration reform. And this is essentially on the right wing of things. This guy probably has or had a decent chance at the presidential election, upcoming presidential election. Well, I mean, we'll have to see how things play out. I mean, this amnesty stuff could destroy him on the right-wing side. But here's him talking about amnesty and immigration reform.
When Ann Coulter gave her speech, just back, I don't know if you saw it or not, she asserts that if amnesty is granted, or illegal aliens are allowed to stay inside the United States, that the United States will begin to look like California, and that the Republicans will never again win another election. Do you agree with her statement?
A lot of people use the word amnesty loosely, and the same way they use pathway to citizenship loosely, and once they use it, you're the enemy of the state if they apply that name to you. The thing is what we have right now is de facto amnesty. So the people who are really going after and saying, oh, you're for amnesty, they need to say what they're going to do. There's 11 million people, and they've been here, many of them, for a decade. Many of them are working, too. What I'm saying is let's get them work visas. Let's normalize them, make them taxpayers. They're not going home. Even all the crowd that are yelling, amnesty, that person's for amnesty, are they for sending these people home? Do they want us to put them in concentration camps on buses and send them back home? I don't think anybody's proposing that. So they're here. They're here illegally. What I'm trying to do is say, let's make them legally here and give them work visas and put them into the process. The problem with immigration we have right now is, let's look at agricultural workers, the ones who come and pick a lot of the crops in our country. Last year we gave out 65,000 agricultural work permits. 1 million people came to pick crops. There's something wrong. When 1 million people are coming in, we want them to pick our crops. The farmers want them to come. But why did 1 million come and only 65,000 came properly? That's where the illegal immigrants come from. So 11 million are here over the last 10 or 15 years. If you don't fix that work visa problem, even if we normalized all the 11 million, which is controversial, but let's say we normalized them and gave them work visas, what's going to stop another 10 years, another 10 million from coming in? Unless you set up the system that works and unless you have border security. So actually my amendment, a lot of the conservatives that are giving me a hard time don't realize that mine is the conservative amendment, because my amendment says that you have to have border security to get the reforms. And so what we do is we're setting up a matrix of things you have to do to make the border more secure. A report is issued, but then the immigration reform does not go forward unless the report comes back and is voted on by Congress. Everybody else says, oh, the president's just going to stamp it and say it's okay. That's not good enough. And so most conservatives have complained, well, gosh, they never gave us border security last time. We want border security now. That's what ours does, is ensures that you get border security before immigration reform goes forward.
So there you have it. Rand Paul, Mr. Libertarian, son of Ron Paul, the libertarian of all libertarians. Yeah, he says there, you know, many of these immigrants that are already here are already working, so I think we need to give them work visas. So essentially what he's saying is, well, they already have taken your jobs, so we might as well give them work visas since they're already doing your job and displacing you anyway. I'm trying to dismantle or think about what else it was he said in there. You know, we have to secure the border. How many times have we heard these liars say, we're going to secure the border with this bill, and it never gets done? Like Bush, under Bush, they were supposed to have secured the border. They didn't do it. Let's see. At the border, they can't shoot them. That's out of the question. They have different protocols as to how they can even apprehend them. Mostly, it seems like they're just watching them cross. And I think they're getting the 11 million number from border agents sitting at the border with you know, those little handheld counters, and they're just like clicking the button. And they're like, oh, there's one. Oh, there's five or six of them. Like, click, 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 click. And I'm pretty sure how that's calculated. I guess their tickers broke a long time ago or something. That's why it's stuck at 11 million. They're like, oh, darn, we don't have money in the budget to buy some more of those counters. I guess we'll just have to give up on that. We'll just keep it at 11 million. It's kind of round. It's a round number. But yeah, the border, securing the border, if you don't want to shoot them, I understand, like, you know, you can't just go around shooting people or, you know, that wouldn't look good or, but even though I guess that's the logic, is like, we can't shoot these people. That would be wrong. We can't just shoot them. The United States military goes all over the world killing people left and right, drone striking people, picking people up in planes, black bagging them, torturing them. And in one case, they picked up a guy with a similar name that was not the guy they were looking for. They tortured him for like 4 days and then brought him home and said, don't tell anybody or we'll kill you. You know, don't tell anybody or we'll come back and kill you. The guy was a cab driver in like Malaysia or something. He didn't know anything. I hate to laugh at that. I mean, that's not funny. That's screwed up. I mean, I think the guy had a wife and kids, and I mean, there was like nothing on him. He had never done anything. He just happened to have a similar name to somebody that was a potential terrorist. But here's an idea. How about we give the border agents paintball guns, or give them beanbag guns, or rubber, you know, guns with rubber bullets on them. Or we can give them, what else can we give them? How to get illegals to go back across that border? How about we put them all in white hoods? Put them all in KKK white hoods and just have them stand there. That probably would scare some of them back. I think they would be pretty terrified of that. I think there's many creative ways of getting them to not cross the border. And in all reality, even if they did have a shoot-to-kill policy, that would probably go on for a very, very short period, and there would probably be less than, I'd say, 100 people killed before illegal immigration would pretty much stop because of fear of being shot when they get across the border. Tom Bowie says, catapult. I like that. Yeah, let's catapult them. There's many ways. They obviously have not wanted to close this border for quite a long time now and have been doing everything they can to not close the border and to secure it. You know, it's so ridiculous because they're worried about Iraq now because you've got ISIS running around taking over Iraq. And they're terrorists. They have no right to take over the land of Iraq, even though they live there. I'm assuming they live there and are from there and probably have family backgrounds in Iraq. They don't have the right to take it over. And since they're taking it over, we need to send more troops to Iraq, and we need to secure it. And if we don't do that, oil prices will jump over – get this, $6 an hour. I mean, $6 an hour. $6 a gallon. We'll be paying $6 a gallon for oil if they take over Iraq. Can you believe that? Can you believe that? That is insane. I mean, come on. That would be so terrible. I mean, we entered Iraq, and it was all for oil, according to those crazy liberals. They were saying it was all for oil at the time. And gas prices just mysteriously just kept going up during that period and, you know, like have doubled and keep going up. And fuel mileage in cars seems to be going in reverse. Like they're like the new fuel-efficient Ford Fusion gets you a healthy 40 miles per gallon. I'm like, 40? Like, we were getting 40 in the 80s with some of these cars. We were getting 40, 50 even. I think the Honda Echo is rated at like 48 miles per gallon. No hybrid, no nothing. And now the best Honda can do with a hybrid is like 45 or something. What's going on here? Yeah, Marcus says gas was $1.50 before Iraq. Yep, I remember when I was, I remember, like, can you remember when gas was close to $1 a gallon? That wasn't that long ago. I mean, that was 12 years ago, you know, less than 15 years ago. So I would have hated to see what would have happened if, had we not invaded Iraq and Afghanistan. Gas would probably be like, I don't know, probably be like $20 a gallon right now, right? Oh, crazy. Boy, I love the American government. It's so great they sent all those people into Iraq to secure that oil for us so we could bring our prices down. Marcus also says the VW Beetle. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. It was making 35 miles per gallon in 1940. And the best we can do is like 45 with a hybrid. You know, you got electric along with an engine, gasoline engine, and yep, 45. That's the best we can do. Ridiculous. But do have another article, and I will read some sections from it. This is from Breitbart. Breitbart.com, I disagree with most of what they say, but they put out some good stuff from time to time. don't endorse them, but, you know, there is some stuff there that seems to be pretty accurate and whatnot. Says here, exclusive from Senator Jeff Sessions, pro-amnesty elites treat people as commodities. it says, perhaps no issue better illustrates the current divide between everyday citizens and our political and business elites than the issue of immigration. The latter group draws the financial gains from a generous labor supply without considering the perspective of those on the other side of the ledger, the working people who have to worry about being laid off and replaced with lower wage workers, about the strain placed on their local hospitals and neighborhood resources, or about cartel violence spilling across the border into their own communities. For instance, Sheldon Adelson, Jew, recently wrote that the immigrants here illegally need jobs, want to work, and are willing to take on jobs that are not appealing to many Americans. Now, like I said before, we see all these people coming out saying they're doing jobs that Americans don't want. They will do jobs that Americans don't want. They trim your hedges, they cut your grass, they scrub your toilets. What all these different elites are really saying is, they're doing jobs that I don't want to do. They're doing jobs that I would never, oh, God, I would never scrub my own toilet even in my own house. I need a Mexican person to do that. I need a South American to scrub my toilet because, God forbid, I might splash a little toilet water on myself. And you know what toilet water does to Jewish people, don't you? Yeah, you don't want to know what toilet water does to Jewish people. Actually turns them on. It's kind of sick, but yeah, it says here some stuff about Rupert Murdoch, which I already read those quotes. Oh no, here's a new one. Murdoch writes that there's a shortage of qualified American candidates, so they do the jobs we don't want, and then we have a shortage of qualified Americans to do jobs. It's really funny. Like they pretty much say anything that they can use in any way. Yeah, there's a shortage of qualified American candidates to fill jobs in STEM fields like computer services and engineering. But the evidence shows the opposite. The U.S. graduates approximately twice as many STEM-trained students each year as there are STEM jobs to fill. There is a large surplus of unemployed Americans with STEM degrees, and yet, per the Economic Policy Institute, the annual inflow of guest workers amount to one-third to one-half of all new IT jobs. Listen to that. The annual inflow of guest workers amount to one-third to one-half of all new IT jobs. So all those new jobs that are being created in America, at least in the tech field, one-third to one-half of them go to immigrants, guest workers, H-1B visa holders, I guess. That's how you say it. As Rutgers professor Hal Salzman, which is probably a Jew, poignantly asked, average wages in IT today are the same as they were when Bill Clinton, the first black president, was in the White House well over a decade ago. If there is a fact, if there is in fact a shortage, why doesn't that reflect in the market? Why don't wages go up? Isn't that interesting? Wages go up when there's less workers? That doesn't make sense. It should go up when we have more immigrants here. I must be reading this wrong. There's no way that a shortage of workers would make wages go up. That's crazy talk. Man, this guy's a nut. Boy, I mean, when you have shortages of products, like Nike Air Jordans and all these new Nike shoes that come out, they're extremely cheap because there's a shortage of those shoes. That's why you have so many blacks lining up for the shoes, because they're so cheap. It makes sense, because they're impoverished, and they release these special edition shoes that are a limited run, and they're really cheap because there's only a small amount of them. Yeah, things that are rare are usually cheap, according to cultural Marxists, apparently. The United States has the most generous immigration policy in the world. Each year, the U.S. grants permanent legal admission to an additional 1 million immigrants who will be able to apply for citizenship, along with roughly 700,000 guest workers, 200,000 relatives of guest workers, and 500,000 students. Want to know why your student loans are so expensive and why it's so expensive to go to college? That's why. These are overwhelmingly not farm workers, as activists falsely suggest, but are instead workers brought in to fill jobs in every sector, occupation, and industry throughout the U.S. economy. Overall, the number of people living in the U.S. who were born in another country has quadrupled since 1970. And yet the Senate immigration bill doubles the rate of future immigration and guest worker admissions. For too long, the immigration debate has been driven by the needs of politicians, business interests, and immigration activists who fail to appreciate that a nation owes certain obligations to its own citizens. Consider immigration policy from the viewpoint of a middle-aged unemployed American who has to borrow gas money to drive to a job interview 100 miles away. Imagine how his or her life is affected when the company gives that open job to a temporary guest worker hired from 10,000 miles away. Imagine what any of the 58 million working-age Americans who don't have jobs might have to say to the lawmakers and activists who claim there is a labor shortage. The phrase immigration reform has been thoughtlessly applied to any legislation that combines amnesty with dramatic future increases to our record supply of labor. This is the singular vision championed by President Obama and congressional Democrats. It therefore falls on the shoulders of Republicans to stand alone as the one party representing the interests of everyday working Americans. And that's the end of the article. Don't know much about Jeff Sessions. I'm guessing he's a Republican. He's a senator. I agree with a lot of what he said there. One thing I would say is where he says, consider immigration policy from the viewpoint of a middle-aged unemployed American. Consider immigration policy from the viewpoint of a unemployed young American. Consider the viewpoint of the kids in our schools that are being forced into classes with people that don't look like them, that don't think like them, that don't have the same interests in a lot of regards, that aren't in the same culture. It's disgusting. I mean, it's despicable. And that's... I don't know, it's I don't understand how it's gotten to the point where it's at with this immigration issue. And I can't believe we're sitting here, we are not sitting here talking about it in this regard, but our government and our media is talking about it in the regard that we need to get rid of our xenophobia and racism and prejudice and embrace these other people, and that they're going to help our economy. They're going to make our economy stronger for everyone. That's It's not true. There's nothing to reflect that whatsoever. Like I said, you have a shortage, wages go up. When you have so many workers to pull from and very few jobs, they can pretty much do whatever they want. And I'll tell you this, I know of people that work at different businesses that are kind of corporate. One job position came open, available, which they applied for. And the manager told them, and this is like a pretty simple, I think a part-time position, probably paid $10 an hour, something like that. They had over 50 applications for that one job. Over 50 applications for just one job. And the company can go through all those applications and they can figure out which one's willing to do it for the cheapest. Another example of corporate bullshit is I knew somebody that was working at a retail store and they had been working there for over a year. And for example, I don't remember the exact numbers, but I knew it was a dollar apart. We'll say they were making... we'll say they were started at $8 an hour and they had a raise to $8.50 over that period, all right? They were hiring people, new people, for the exact same position, the exact same amount of hours a week, brand new people, untrained, unfamiliar with the job, and were paying them $9.50 an hour to start. Not due to any increase in minimum wage or anything like that. And this person, they found out that's what they were doing, and she asked her manager, hey, I know that they're hiring people at this wage to do the same job. Do you think I could get a raise maybe? And her manager called corporate and tried her best to get her a raise, but they would not allow it. They would not approve it. So that just shows you just how freaking just sick these corporations can be and typically are. Yeah, so you work there, you know the job, you've been there for over a year, and they hire new people and pay them more than they're paying you, and then they tell you, oh, we can't pay you as much as we pay the new people. Can't do that. I don't know why. We just can't do it. I forgot to give out the call-in number. Call-in number is 347-633-9657. That is 347-633-9657. Do have another audio clip to play. This is also featured on the Renegade news stream there. It is a video clip. It's a video clip from W something news. I believe it's LA. And it is regarding Gary Oldman and some of his recent comments in an interview. And if you want to find the link to it, just scroll up to the headline news and click on Ruben Oive. And that'll bring it up. So I'm going to go ahead and play this about 2 minutes, and then we'll come back.
All right, from classic idiocy, now to something that's decidedly much more serious, and perhaps also somewhat misguided. We all search for candor, but should you really share every opinion you have with Playboy magazine, Gary Oldman is undeniably talented. But I think this is going to cause a stir. Oldman tells Playboy that maybe, you know, that whole entire Mel Gibson situation was perhaps taken out of context. Here's what Gary says. I don't know about Mel. He got drunk and said a few things, but we've all said those things. We're all blank hypocrites. The policeman who arrested him has never used the N-word or a disparaging comment towards Jews, he asked. All right. After pouring the gasoline, Gary here lights the match. Mel Gibson is in a town that's run by Jews, and he said the wrong thing because he's actually bitten the hand that I guess has fed him, or the hand that I guess has fed him, and doesn't feed him, doesn't need to feed him anymore, because he's got enough dough. He's like an outcast, a leper, you know. A quick sidebar. If Hollywood were really, truly run by Jews entirely for their own benefit, shouldn't I be doing better? And now the veteran actor goes on to say, it's so true, right? Really, at the Oscars. If
you have shot to the middle, so, that's pretty good.
It's that conspiracy.
Right.
The Trilateral Commission has put me right in the middle. The veteran actor says, political correctness affects award season. At the Oscars, if you didn't vote for 12 Years a Slave, you were a racist. You have to be very careful about what you say. I do have particular views and opinions that most of this town doesn't share, but it's not like I'm a fascist or a racist.
Have another cocktail, Gary.
Okay, Gary. My new show, which I'm going to produce with Henry's friend, is called Two Drinks In.
Oh, really?
I'm serious. I think that would be...
That's all it takes.
I think two drinks is enough to let it all go.
And there you have it. I believe the Jewish person there speaking, his name is Reuben, and I saw some comments on the YouTube video that was saying that the same Reuben guy said that he can't tell black people apart previously on some news broadcast. So this guy is essentially, kind of in a way, he's saying that Gary Oldman is racist and that he's making all these crazy claims about Jews that aren't true, like Jews run Hollywood. Oh, I would be doing so much better. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, if Jews run Hollywood, I'd be in a better position, right, guys? Yeah. But this Jew can't tell black people apart. Even I can tell them apart sometimes. Sometimes they look very similar, and that goes for a lot of races. Though I think it's just how things are. A lot of Asians look the same to me. I mean, pretty much all non-whites look the same to me. I don't notice as many differences in them as I do white people, but I think the same would apply to those people. They probably some of them probably think all white people look the same too. I don't know. That was kind of interesting, kind of funny. I think there was a few. Oh, if you go to the right side of the Renegade page, there's a poll asking how many illegal immigrants do you estimate currently reside in the U.S. You have a few different options there to choose. So I guess go over there and vote if you feel like it. If you don't, then don't vote. It's up to you. But there was something else I wanted to read here. Let me see if I can, pull it up. I've got a lot of windows open. 11 CEOs from some of the nation's largest companies have signed on to a new letter to Congress urging passage of immigration reform that includes massive increases in low-skilled foreign workers. Signatories include McDonald's, Lowe's Hotels and Resorts, Tyson Foods, Coca-Cola, and Choice Hotels. So McDonald's, they need more low-skilled workers. It's terrible that McDonald's, they're having trouble finding employees. I mean, can you believe that? It's just these fast food companies, they have such a hard time. Like, nobody wants to work there. I mean, these silly Americans, they don't want to work at McDonald's. I can't for the life of me figure out why. McDonald's, they're such a great corporation. They create food that is just, I mean, delicious, man. If you've never had a Big Mac or a McRib, you're just completely missing out. It is delicious. And, I mean, as soon as you eat that McRib, you just feel alive. It's like it gives you a high. You just feel so good. You want to conquer the world after eating a McRib. Boy, man. And, I mean, if that's not for you, they got healthy options. You can get a salad. Unfortunately, it's only, these healthy option foods only account for like 1% of what McDonald's sells. So it's but yeah, they can't find anybody to work there. Great company, great company. I completely endorse McDonald's. Yeah, and I mean Ronald McDonald, Irish pride. Yeah, Irish pride completely with his red hair. Sadly, people do want to work at McDonald's because there's very few jobs available at this point in time. And if you're a young person, or typically, at least in my area, if you're a South American, you're in. If you're a South or Central American, that seems to be all that I'm seeing at McDonald's. Occasionally, in I guess black neighborhoods, there's blacks, but. Well, to be honest, I don't think I've stepped foot in a McDonald's in probably 6 or 7 years now. But at least at the time, it was a lot of South Americans, South and Central Americans. So let's go over to the call board. Looks like I got a caller here, 240. 240, what's your name and where are you calling from?
Tom Bowie, La Plata, Maryland.
Hey, Tom, can I ask you a question?
Yes, sir.
Well, are you saying the plate of Maryland?
La Plata.
La Plata, Maryland. See, I've been wondering for a while now, like, is he saying the plate of Maryland? Like, what is the plate of Maryland? La Plata, Maryland. Okay, that makes a lot of sense now. I'm glad I cleared that up.
A lot of people have trouble understanding my deep accent.
It's all good, man.
Yeah, I was listening to Neocon Radio late last night, and they had some experts on all of the border crossings being done now. It seems at least a semi-legitimate business, cottage industries, have cropped up in Mexico to assist the border crossers. They sell such things as camouflage backpacks to match the area you will be crossing the border.
Wow.
And footwear that helps prevent you from leaving a strong footprint that you can be tracked with.
Wow. That's pretty wild.
So, the cost to be professionally taken into the United States across the border has gone up. Particularly with the children, they will charge them the regular fee and then take them part way. And then they'll tell them, we either dump you here or you pay again.
Wow.
If you can't pay, you just have to take this pack of drugs across the border for us. So
That sounds about right.
So yeah, a lot of them have a relative who can wire the money. They're all set up to receive Western Union MoneyGrams and all of that stuff. But if you can't actually get someone to wire the money, you either get stranded or you tote the drugs in.
Yeah, I think I read that it's like 50. I think $50 billion is sent every year across the southern border by immigrants from South America, Central America, living in the United States. So they're sucking $50 billion out of our economy every year, sending it down there. I mean, can't exactly blame them. I mean, they're trying to help their families out, but or trying to, you know, do what you're talking about, trying to, you know, send some money down so their family can come up here. But it's not good. Not good at all. And I think that gives you a good indication that, at least that indicates to me that there's more than 11 or 12 million illegals living in the United States.
Yeah. And the other day I read a little article from the Daily Sheeple. And this sudden and surprise wave of underaged and unaccompanied minors, the Department of Homeland Security advertised for a contractor to start on bids for them back in January.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very specific number of 65,000 alien minors. That
wow.
says they weren't taken by all that much of a surprise.
No. That's very interesting. And see, this happened, I think I read it in the article today that June the 20th was, what was it called? It was a refugee day or something like that. And this stuff really seemed to kind of like happen around pretty much that date. It revolved around that date.
Yeah.
it's all
the advertisement apparently reached a peak where they could predict there would be a sudden rush for the border.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It kind of makes me wonder if at least a large part of the manufactured news wasn't designed to provoke that reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
For not being able to recognize people of other races well, they have in the past, several years ago, I think, determined that the brain is actually wired that way. The closer someone is related to you, the easier it is for the brain to distinguish them.
Hmm. That's interesting.
So not only do they all look alike to us at times, we all look alike to them.
Hmm. Yeah, it seems somewhat like just a natural thing for people. I mean, we're not. I guess it's kind of trying to think of another thing outside of just races or groups of people to apply it to. But you don't notice subtle differences between things unless you kind of learned these subtle differences that are there and are actually looking for them. If you're not educated on it or experienced at it, you just won't notice it altogether. You'll just pass it by and not think anything about it.
Well, one good example might be giraffes.
Mm-hmm.
There are about 20 subspecies of giraffe, and humans can't tell them apart.
Oh,
but
wow.
The giraffe can.
I did not, wasn't aware of that. It's pretty interesting.
They all look like just one giraffe to us.
Mm-hmm.
But their brains are wired to tell their own species versus others, own subspecies versus others.
Now, does it have anything to do with the patterns, or?
It's been quite a while since I read that. There is a slight variation in the patterns, but I think there were a few other factors, too.
Okay. That's pretty interesting, though. I did not know there were, you know, a giraffe's a giraffe to me. They all look the same.
Yeah, well, somebody discovered it accidentally in noticing that captured giraffes would sort of separate into groups almost on a spontaneous method, and some would kind of stand apart from everybody else. And only after being lonely for a few days would they attempt to associate with other giraffes. I guess the same would be true if we you took some random samplings of different people of different races and suddenly pinned them up. The person from the lone race would probably tend to stay to himself for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, Tom, what do you think about the immigration issue, and are you seeing, would you say you're seeing an increase in immigrants moving into area, your area and areas surrounding you, or are you seeing less, or what's kind of the situation in your neck of the woods there?
Well, up until about 2 years ago, I wasn't seeing very many South Americans at all. I was seeing a large number of blacks that had been basically run out of formerly black neighborhoods by the influx of the South Americans. Once the South Americans in those neighborhoods reached a certain amount, they no longer played well with the blacks.
Yep.
And over the last year or so, I've been noticing more South Americans in my area. One of the favorite hangouts of the black people in the town, the local fried chicken establishment, has been taken over by Mexicans.
That's unfortunate. I haven't seen that quite yet here, but I have seen different establishments that used to be, you know, kind of black businesses or black stores and shops that eventually closed, bought out by Mexicans, South Americans of some sort. I don't know. They all look the same to me.
Yeah, but that's why I've lumped them all in as South Americans.
Yeah.
Well,
the thing is, a lot of people call them, a lot of people just say Mexicans. Yet, I know from working on job sites, when I was younger, most of them I was younger, I would ask them, you know, where they're from, or they would say where they're from. I'll be damned if most of them didn't say they were from Honduras. And I was like, you know, I thought these guys were Mexicans. You know, here I am. I thought they were Mexicans, but they're really from Honduras. So it's not just this Mexican.
Yeah, I found that the ones from Guatemala, they let it slide when white Americans say it.
Mm-hmm.
But they really don't like to be called Mexicans.
Yeah. Yeah.
So naturally, I go out of my way to refer to anybody from Guatemala as a Mexican.
Well,
I can get away with it. They'll excuse it, and they don't like it. That's great.
That's funny. I'll say a town nearby me. One day, I was headed to a job, and it was either a Friday or a Saturday, and I had to drive past a elementary school. And this town it's got quite a large, Hispanic or South American population. And apparently the school was doing some type of relay race or walk, you know, race thing or something around the town, like different blocks, and they had a lot of it closed off, phones out, and police everywhere. And I will say, like 80% of the kids that I saw running in this little race were South Americans, and I was quite astonished to see that there was so many of them. I mean, it was not, you know, 50%, I would still be somewhat surprised, but yeah, it was, I rarely saw a white kid or even a black kid. This is used to be a really nice wide area. There's still some nice little pockets of it, but for the most part, really, the previously really nice white areas have become pretty mediocre looking, kind of run down, and just it's not as clean and nice as to be. It's kind of depressing to see, know what it used to look like and see what it looks like today. Saw a lot of you know, South American standing on sidewalks waiting for their kids to come in, and had like 3 little kids with them and are pregnant, so, you know, they're all over the place, just repopulating.
Yeah, anybody who can afford to is probably moved out, and they use an excuse like better neighborhood or better school.
Yeah. I want my kid to go to a good school.
And they won't admit why their school's not good.
Mm-hmm. And the big thing in North Carolina has been the Wake County, essentially Raleigh, the capital of Wake County, and there's been this big controversy going on for a few years over busing and different schools. And the NAACP president of the North Carolina chapter, his name is Reverend something Barber. And when you see this guy, he's just like the fattest black man, kind of greasy black man you've ever seen. And he's always out there complaining about something. But this busing issue, essentially, you had black schools and you had white schools, and blacks are upset because their kids are going to bad schools, and so they want the town or the city and the county to bus them to different schools, even though they're far away from where they actually live, and essentially diversify and based on grades and all of that, quality of the schools, and kind of mix all of it up. It's really pissed off a lot of on both sides issue, and it's really caused a serious mess to where the last school season there were kids that were on a bus like 8 hours or some crap. Like, it went so totally wrong. There's a lot of very upset their kids at. You know, it's 8 o'clock at night, my kids aren't home from school yet. It's terrible.
Yeah, well, the main ones that get upset about that will be the white neighborhoods. The black neighborhoods look at it from a different point of view. Free babysitter.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. They're like, oh, isn't this nice? You know, my kid, he's still on the bus. Still on the bus. He'll hang out and smoke. Oh, man. Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if they were thrilled by that, longer busing time.
Well, I say that because I've actually heard that said, doesn't it? When you live in a diverse area, you hear all sorts of strange things upon occasion.
Mm-hmm. That is That's completely true. I've heard quite a lot of strange things from even the diversity around my area, just an open conversation. And I've been hearing actually some people overhearing some conversations, people talking about a lot of the same things that we're talking about, that were seemingly completely taboo just 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And I don't know where they're hearing a lot of this stuff from. I'm not sure if they're, you know, kind of secretly listening to broadcasts like this and or what. I'm not fully sure, but it's definitely the messages are getting out. The truth is starting to really, be talked about a little bit more and accepted a little bit more, I think.
Yeah, it's. I think a large part of it is due to the internet, and another large part is people are pushing the message, and the other people who have had these ideas are starting to actually make comments about it, at least on the internet. And that's spilling over into real life. Once you get accustomed to speaking up, even a little bit, mm-hmm. it tends to snowball effect somewhat.
Yep. Yep, that is most certainly true. And I think the more of these things that are said in a public conversation that, whether it be one-on-one or with a group or whatever it is, it seems like it kind of it's more effective than just doing, you know, radio. You know, of course, you have a smaller audience when you're one-on-one. You're just talking to that one person. But I've seen some pretty good effects of just mentioning, you know, you don't have to go all out with it, but if you see an opportunity, you need to take that opportunity to speak up and throw in 2 cents and, you know, give them facts, or, you know, make a point, you know, point out the double standards. Forrest has said many times. It seems like it's become pretty easy to point out that double standard. It's getting brought up a lot. A lot of people are ticked off about what's going on, especially the immigration issue. It seems to really piss off a lot of people, and I'm happy about that. And at a certain regard, you know, I am happy that they are, because they should be, because I think, as I've detailed tonight, it's completely ridiculous. Since all we're hearing out of the mainstream is complete lies, and, you know, they make a statement that's not based in anything whatsoever. It's out of their ass, and they repeat it over and over again, and others end up repeating it ignorantly.
Yeah, they've been silent about the real issues, except when they could bring forth a stereotype of their choosing for so long. Mm-hmm. I don't think the mainstream media knows really how to transition into anything and keep the message as they want it.
Yeah, it's become really difficult with the internet now, because a lot of people are going away from mainstream, and even those that are still consuming the mainstream, you know, they're getting chain emails from people with a video in it, or I mean, they're being exposed, or they'll watch something about they'll watch a news video about the knockout game on YouTube, and they might find one of Kyle's videos about black and white violence, or somebody else's video about it, you know, really going more in-depth and exposing it a little bit more. And so they're being exposed to it, those type of outlets. And the mainstream has no real control over that, at least for now.
Yeah, it's only going to get worse for them. All they've been able to do so far is, like with the knockout game, after they realized over 90% of the country was aware of it on some level, then they could cover it and claim it's a rare event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they were forced into covering it at all.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how many meetings there were. How many people you think know about this? Well, from the looks of things, almost half. Okay, that's only almost half. Let's get off talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Seems to be kind of their mindset on it, is dealing with things. And there's so much that the mainstream just has not even talked about at all. I mean, like, they won't even mention it. You know, you go back to the old William Pierce broadcasts where he's talking about local news stories that were not reported nationally. And I know there was one a while back in my state that did not get any national coverage and was barely covered in the local news of the area that it happened in. And it was where a black woman at a bar shot four people. None of them died, but she shot four people. And she had been charged with having a gun on a college campus just a few months prior to that. So it was, it's like, why, and this was right after Sandy Hook or one of the big shootings, and typically that's when you see them promote any type of shooting that they can get their hands on, because it's already in the news, it doesn't seem obvious that they're trying to push gun control as much, but they did not pick up on it, and even the local didn't talk about it after that. They ran one article on it.
Well, there's a lot of stories that even the local newspapers are never apprised of. As long as the police, outside police particularly, don't have to be called, It can kind of be ignored. A lot of state and federal facilities, such as the Department of Agriculture, has their own police force.
Mm-hmm.
And if no one's hurt in a shooting, no one will ever hear about somebody firing a gun on one of their facilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
I worked at one state facility that had a police officer assigned to it, and a disgruntled employee came in and held the director hostage for a while.
Wow.
And no newspaper, no coverage whatsoever, no one hurt. Report filed through the state police, and that was the extent of it.
Mm-hmm.
And she even managed to avoid getting in trouble for it.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. See, the facility she was holding the director hostage at was a state mental facility. And she went directly from his office to one of the psychologists to turn herself in.
Hmm.
Since it was a voluntary turn-in, she could also leave at any time she wanted at that time. But the psychologist said she recognizes there's a problem and is taking steps to overcome it.
Now, the person that held them up, you said they were an employee at this facility?
Yes.
Okay, I was like, maybe she was, or the person that held the director up, you know, maybe she was a occupant of this facility and not an employee.
It was oftentimes hard to tell.
Oh, my.
As a matter of fact, one of the residents at that facility who was there by court order, he wanted me at one time to take what he considered reasonable action. I also considered it reasonable action. But I explained to him the state's policy and why I couldn't do it. And he made a statement that was more or less, and they got me locked up in here for being crazy. They're crazier than I am.
Yeah, I would think you'd have to, a lot of people working at facilities like that would have to be crazy to deal with not only the people there, but I think the government bureaucracy surrounding that type of facility would probably be crazier than most of the people there.
Well, a large number of the workers there were Africans from Africa. And you ended up with threat by voodoo as a way of doing some business at the facility.
That is priceless. Oh, my gosh.
I ended up inadvertently terrorizing the Africans, at least some of them. And they had respect of a type for me after I did what I did. One of the supervisors, they put a snake in her car. And I got it out. And I told the person on duty I was headed back to the dietary department. And I skinned the snake and tossed the head and the guts in the trash and then disposed of the rest of the snake where it wouldn't be found, the flesh. Mm-hmm. And I came back after a half an hour, and that snake was delicious. And I had eaten their voodoo snake. That just terrorized the local shaman.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that I think that might do it. Oh, man.
From pretty much then on the shifts I was working, there wasn't a whole lot of voodoo going on.
Yeah. I bet that put an end to it pretty quick. That's probably the weirdest story. That was some of the weirdest stories I've heard, really anywhere relating to anybody's work. I've never experienced people trying to use voodoo against me on work in the workplace. I think it would be kind of fun to have that happen, because I obviously do not believe in any of that. I would like to see them do their worst, but that's not surprising that they've got those type of people working in a facility like that.
So who were the patients, really?
Yeah, I guess it was the whole facility was, or most of the facility was just patients.
Yeah.
Well, I guess they were kind of peas in the pod together, the workers and the patients in that regard. I'm sure they understood each other very well.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of difference if a patient gets hold of the phone and calls you about aliens in the building versus a worker who calls you about they're under a voodoo curse. It's on the same level.
I think I'd be more apt to believe the guy talking about aliens than the worker talking about voodoo.
Yes.
At least aliens is pretty much plausible. I've never seen any evidence of the reality of voodoo.
I've only seen it in its psychological effects.
Yeah.
Pretty much, it could be in some ways described as a very primitive form of psychological warfare for the simple-minded.
That's probably a pretty good assessment of it. it's funny stuff, man, but I think I'm going to go ahead and end the show out and appreciate your call. And, thank you for listening. I enjoy, when you call in, and I hope you maybe would do a wild card in the future. I know currently we have the Monday slot open. I think it's lined up for at least next week. Maybe I would like to hear some about yourself and how you kind of came to the realization that you have and the knowledge and understanding. And you sure do seem to have a lot of good stories. I'm sure it would make a very interesting show and very educational show.
Yeah, I found that enough psychological trauma gives you a chance to break your mental conditioning no matter how deep you're under.
Yeah, I think that's very true. Enough stress from something like that, eventually it's going to kind of break. And it's not going to have the same power over you that it used to have. At least that seems to be the case in many circumstances. I can't speak for everybody or for, it seems to have happened quite a number, especially, people involved in struggle.
Yeah, in the iconic movie They Live, where they had those special glasses that allowed you to see the aliens,
mm-hmm.
There was perhaps one thing that is different in an awakening. When you're suddenly seeing something you've never seen before, it's as if the whole world transformed around you, or if you see something that was right in front of you and you couldn't look at it. It's very stressful on the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
It'll accelerate the process of breaking down any conditioning you have.
Yeah. Yeah, I never quite really thought of it in those terms, but I think you're right on that. I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head. And They Live, that movie, there was a lot to digest in that. I think I've watched it a few times, and every time I kind of learn something new, so to speak, or see something different, or come to some type of realization through it. I think it is a good film to watch. If you're into still watching any films, I know some people, they just have no interest in watching any film, really whatsoever that's been put out by Hollywood. But that seems to be one that really slipped through the cracks. Not anything really in particular in it that sets off too many bells. Jesse was trying to wake up the black guy in the movie, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Which he had a lot of trouble with.
And that was a somewhat unbelievable thing that Rowdy Rodney Piper got his butt kicked by that fella.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true as well.
All right. I thank you, sir. It's always a pleasure.
The same to you. Enjoy your calls. Call in, you know, anytime. You're always welcome here. And I hope you have a good night.
You too, sir.
All right. That was Tom Bowie, everyone, from La Plata, Maryland. Not the Plate of Maryland, not the Plain of Maryland, La Plata, Maryland. And great guy. And yeah, so I hope immigration issue, and I hope I gave you maybe some ideas of arguments to make against immigration, and arguments you can use with people that are not really aware maybe of what exactly we're all about and what we're talking about. And I hope I did it justice. I could definitely probably spend five shows into different details of the issue, and I might come back sometime in the near future. That needs to be hammered. Say out of any issue, any topic right now in America, that this is one that you can talk about with white people that aren't we are about. Of what the issues are, because it's the support's already there. Even with non-whites, they don't like this immigration issue either. Said before, I've heard blacks talk about they don't like how Mexicans are taking over their neighborhoods. And I've heard Mexicans and South Americans talk about how they don't like illegals, like they came here illegally. So even so-called Hispanics disagree with illegal immigration. So just if you end up around them and you put a word in there, you might as well. What you got to lose, really? I think many of us are too concerned with just some non-white in their opinion. So do what you can. Keep up the good fight. Thank everyone for listening. Enjoy your night, and be sure to check out great show, Gay Broadcasting. Enjoy your night. Thank you for listening.